Yeah, we
to
do.
Stay in there. Stay in
a fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. In any weather, you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind. We'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland. We never weaken till the final siren's gone.
Back-to-back wins, Tiger fans. We've done it. We've finally got the monkey off the back this year, and we've cracked 100 points all in the same week, which I think for a lot of supporters, that was the big tick of the box to try and get 100 points in the year. The back-to-back, I don't think anyone ever really thought about until it became an option a couple of times, but to do that in emphatic style was very, very pleasing to see. So welcome to everybody, to wherever you are listening around the world. CB, welcome back, mate. How are you feeling?
Yeah, feeling good. Feeling good. It's always back-to-back wins, mate. First one since 2023. So getting it done. And we raised the bat and kicked over a ton. So, yeah, good weekend.
It was looking a bit dicey for their second EJ. We looked like we'd shut up shop for the last 8 or 9 minutes. And I think everyone was just willing us to kick a score of some type. Even if it was just behind, I would have taken that if we got 100 from a point.
Yeah.
But we got there in the end.
Yeah. But I don't think anyone wants to see me tonight. I'm just going to leave.
It's the best you've looked all year.
100%. 100%.
What a great tackle. And it wasn't just, I mean, we'll talk about it soon, Grock, but it wasn't just that one tackle. It was his next bit of play about 2 or 3 minutes after. It's inspiring stuff, and it's so good to see it happening this early in a rebuild, and it definitely fired us up and got us going.
Yeah, I'd say overall he had a pretty good game. It wasn't just the tackle, it wasn't the smother, but every time he got the ball, something positive happened for us. So that's why we've been screaming for him to get up the ground.
Exactly right. Now, I might flip the order here. EJ, did you want to go with what you mentioned before we started? Because I've seen a comment in relation to it, that's all.
Right. Well, there'll be some other nominations. And it didn't make the list because I'm a magnanimous person. But one of the special mentions for the Come On Man this week is the two bandwagon supporters, CB and Grock. We get flogged week after week, and you and I front up and carry this bloody show. And these two Wallace Fairweathers have just started to turn up now that we're winning. Come on, man!
Yes. No. Sorry for getting gutted like a fish. And... character, right here. You're right. I should have been whacked out of my brains on whatever the drugs they were giving me, and just
life from the operating table. That would have been a good one.
Yeah. I knew it was coming when Michael sent me the message this afternoon asking if I was on. I was like, if I say yes, I know I'm going to cop it for being fair weather. I just know.
At that point in time, it wasn't actually a loaded question, but no. Look, to be fair to both of them, I will fly the flag a little bit. They have had a fair bit of going on. Obviously, CB was a bit crook, and Grocky were crook as well for a little bit there too, and work stuff. So, but no, we love having a full panel on. It gives a bit more diverse opinion, and I know the fans love it, so it's good to have everyone on board.
Yes. You're it's a dog, EJ. You're a dirty, rotten dog.
That shot fired goes out to Nick's son, Peter, who Nick Rarakis' son, Peter, who actually loves the banter, and so I was going to take a shot at CB this week, no matter what. So g'day,
you just finding the right bullet.
Yeah, g'day, Peter.
Oh gosh. All right, well, we'll jump. I've got a lot of attachments down here to load up tonight, so hopefully I don't stuff this up. But the first one I'm going to go with is the North Melbourne Death Ride chart. We've had improvement. We've had progress this week, folks. It's back, and we're up and about here. The Kangaroos, I didn't line up that red square probably. That's pissed me right off, that Sydney one. But the Kangaroos lost to the Swans. So the Swans did a solid there. And with us winning our game, that's now leapt. We've leapfrogged North Melbourne. They're now in 17th position. We've still got picks 2 and 3, but it's the other way around, which is a massive, massive W. And that, of course, that can change. If they've still got the chance to beat us, and they might win other games. But for the time being, it's all coming up Richmond at the moment with getting draft pick number 2. Do you reckon, gents, I remember we've still got the video of this up on our YouTube page when we were doing the live on trading on draft night, and we were all in hysterics about this trade. Do you reckon that they thought that they were going to be below us at any stage of the season?
They backed themselves into be pushing for finals at this point, the way that they've loaded up the past couple of years, bringing in Darling and Daniel as well. Yeah, oh, they'd be absolutely filthy.
And just quietly, they did the trade to get Whitlock, and how good is Sims going?
The funny thing is, like, the Roos big footy board is like on fire right now because of it, and there's several supporters saying that they need to trade their future first for 2026 out so they can get a pick back this year. So I have
to double down.
Yeah, it's like, what's the definition of insanity?
Doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Absolutely.
Whitlock has played a game. He played one game and he was subbed off fairly early. He did play one and was subbed off, but not all as well in that realm as well. But depending on how this starts to pan out towards the end of the year, we might have to do a cheeky live death ride later in the season or something like that. I don't know. We'll think of something to do. But good to see it swap places.
Just quietly, I do the right thing and give a bloke a shout out, and he calls me Shrek.
He did cop him.
How good am I going?
There we go.
I reckon, Michael, you should just rebump the video. Just repost the video of us laughing at North Melbourne, giving us pick two or pick three.
If I remember correctly, I reckon there was a few North fans that went and commented on that Tuesday. No, it wasn't that bad of a trade. It's going to be fine. I'm like, oh, okay, we'll wait and see. So yeah, we'll have to go back and find
update,
that one.
Sorry, apparently out. Shrek is Nick. That's even better.
Everyone's copping it. Yeah, and CJ broke down again. I think North are in trouble for the next couple of weeks, just to wrap up the North Melbourne part, especially with Jerry out. I'm not sure when Larky's due back, but if they can lose the St Kilda game too, that would be handy as well to make sure there's some separation created. But not all going well for the Tigers on that front. I suppose we should talk about the game that everyone, I think, was shocked to see the result of, to be honest. We won by 49 points. I don't think any of us got even remotely close to tipping that margin. Richmond 16-9-105 defeated West Coast 8-8-56 by 49 points in Perth. Huge result. And first time cracking 100 points since round 23, 2023. First time with back-to-back wins in Uze's tenure. First back-to-back win since round 18-19 in 2023. And the highest winning margin under Adam Uze CB. Take it away. What were you? I've just thrown you off guard because I didn't see you were drinking. I was reading stats.
Interesting. All I'll say, as we were talking before we went on air, just a quick little dive on Damien Hardwick's first 3 years as coach. And to put things in perspective of how the parallels, so Hardwick's first year was 6-14 or something in his first year. Then he Then his second year, he was 8 wins, 1 draw. In the third year, he was 10 wins, 1 draw. So if we hadn't have coughed those two games up against North Melbourne and GWS, we would have been sitting on 7 wins at this stage. So we're actually probably tracking. I know we're saying we're going okay. We're probably tracking a bit further ahead of where we thought we might have been, to be honest. We're probably going better than what we thought. So wonderful. And you can only beat what's in front of you. And people can talk about the team that West Coast had on the park. But at the end of the day, the bookies had them favourite, mate, so they clearly didn't rate us too well. So well done to Uze, the coaching group, and more importantly, the players. So it was terrific.
And the best thing for us is not to win those two games that we, in inverted commas, should have won, because we don't want to get too high up the ladder.
Yeah.
Because with protecting our draft pick, we haven't been tanking. But we've shown real development, but not getting those extra wins actually puts us in a better position at draft time. So it's a win-win with a lose-lose.
We've somehow manufactured the best of both worlds, haven't we, Grok? Which is, I mean, it's always nice to win those earlier games, but I think a lot of us probably felt the back half of the year, I personally didn't think we were going to see any wins in the back half of the year. I thought we were going to fade away dramatically. So to see two already, we've already won more quarters than we have last year as well. I think that's been a massive positive for the club.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at the makeup of the list and the best 22, I was with you. I thought we'd struggle to win a couple of games in the back half of the year after the bye, just with the young kids running out of steam. And I thought, especially after Lynch went down too, that we'd really struggle to score. But yeah, it's been fantastic. That the bye, it seems, has really freshened up a lot of the younger players. There just seems to be a bit more energy in the group now than there was the two or three games before the bye, where we just seemed a little sluggish. So I think the bye came at the perfect time. And yeah, there's every chance that we win another couple of games now based on the way that we're playing.
Yeah.
No, exactly. And keep right in mind,
too, if people talk about the game style, quarters one and four versus Essendon is the way we want to play. Unfortunately, in that game, quarters two and three, when Essendon sat three blokes behind the ball, we couldn't play the way we wanted. So we changed the way we played to get the win, which was important. And then if you look at the way we played on the weekend, run and gun through the middle, that's what we want to do. And we got four quarters. So six of the last quarters, is, if you're actually paying attention, is what we're trying to achieve.
And I think that now puts to bed that the Essendon game was largely their fault, right? Like if it was on us, we would have played equally as bad, or a large chunk of it equally as bad again. But EJ, how nice was it to see a contrasted game from the Essendon one, where we had the free-flowing ball movement? You know, we often hear and see comments and talk about ourselves, the game plan or lack of seeing it against these better sides. We shut it down. We finally come up against someone else on the same level as us, and we're able to execute it pretty much at will, and it was devastating. That third quarter, eight goals. I can't remember the last time we've kicked eight goals in a quarter.
Well, so did you say the same level as us?
Wow. Just pre-game. Yeah,
look, it was really good. It was really noticeable, actually, that we were determined to get it back into the middle and go through the corridor. They were stunned and stuck and struggled to move it against us until they just threw everything out the window in the last quarter, and they were going around the flanks. So yeah, I really enjoyed the movement. You know, there were some amazing kicks, you know, none as good as Sonzi's, you know, on the 45 back into the guts. That was a ripper. I'm just going to put a word of caution out there. It's a small flag up on the game. Was when West Coast just threw everything out in the last quarter, they actually got through the middle quite easily. It took us half a quarter to adjust and to reset, which was a little. The only negative for me on that match was that when West Coast did hit the button, that it took us a little while to readjust.
I think in that last quarter as well, Grock, I reckon the message from Equalta to them would have been, hey, we've got to show up here in the last quarter and actually salvage something from the shitful effort of the quarter before. So I kind of wasn't surprised they threw the kitchen sink at us, but to EJ's point, it did take us a little while to get our bearings and to adjust. And it did look like we may have gone goalless at one point in that last quarter and missed out on the ton, but the boys found a way late, which was nice.
Yeah, it was almost like the first half of the first quarter where they just bullied us around the stoppage. I mean, Harley Reid was fantastic around stoppages all night, bar the sort of quarter and a half between halftime and sort of halfway through the last, where Rossi did a really good job on him. But he bullied us around the contest. Obviously, when over the course of the game, Hopper and Taranto probably had the better of Reid, but When the ball was there to be won, he was the only one that stepped up, which is an indictment on West Coast, really, that their best player and the one that's standing up and showing all the players heart and effort and contest is a 19, 20-year-old whose future at the club is up in the air at this point. So, yeah, I reckon Mini would have been filthy at three-quarter time after the eight-goal quarter and would have been breathing smoke. Told them to get at least some respectability back. Obviously, it was a bit too late. I think they responded well for the first 15 minutes of that quarter. We ended up equalising a little bit better after that. But, yeah, it's just a dirty night for the Eagles, it was.
Oh, well, stuff them. I mean, they would have set themselves for that as one of their games to win for the rest of the season, as did we, and we obviously drove it a lot harder than they did CB, but the game for us was full of a lot of individual great performances that kind of culminated in one great team performance. But if we can just pay some love to some of the individual efforts, I'll just bring this up quickly. The Morris Rioli chase down, I mean, you see chases like that happen often in games, but typically in the last five or so steps, the guy with the ball generally kicks it and it's all for nothing. That was a pivotal turning point in the game. And I'm pretty sure Uze said as much post-game, according to the interview on the website, that that's what he highlighted. That was the intensity. That was the moment. And not to mention Morris's follow-up afterwards with the smother and then picked the ball up and kicked it to Nane Curvis in the goal square. What a 10-minute patch from Morris to set us up for the night.
What's pleasing is it's 2 out of 3 games now. He's played really, really good footy. So it shows a bit of maturity and a bit of consistency coming into his game, which is what we've been dying. We've been dying to see it. And it was just, it was an igniter. That tackle was a dead set igniter for the team. And if you weren't out of your chair for that, then my goodness, it was pretty wild.
Can I give one extra clap on the back for Morris with that tackle, right? Yeah. The awareness to just get the ball and handball and move it on. One of the things that's really crept into the game this year is when someone makes a tackle just holding the ball, they shove the player on the ground and, you know, all this fake tough stuff. He just got the ball and played on and got the game going. I really liked that about him.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a terrific effort. I mean, he came, was like an 80-meter, like, gut-busting sprint because he started, you know, 30 meters out in our forward line and chased him down just near the square. It was a fantastic effort. And as EJ said, just the class to get on with the game. No, you know, no showboating, no antagonizing, just get on with it. And, yeah, it was absolutely fantastic.
To tack on to that point of yours, EJ, he then was about the second or third person back inside our forward 50 again, post that whole thing chasing up for the next kick. So it kind of eradicates some of the concerns people may have about his fitness, that he's had a 80-meter complete flat-out sprint, diving tackle, then followed it up sprinting back inside 50 to assist the next play. It was a super effort. And I agree, CB, it's now 2 out of 3 games. We're seeing a bit more consistency at a higher level. And I know people are going to say it was only against Essendon and West Coast and whatever, but you still got to be able to perform on the night, and it was good to see him do that. Jack Ross, EJ, again, we've seen him get the tagging job in the second half of football, and it's had very, very good effect. And it's interesting to hear Ross's comments on it himself, saying it gives him a chance to focus in and zone in on a particular task. And the beauty of Jack Ross doing this, maybe as opposed to Camden, is Ross can also, he's also smart enough to find his own football at the best of times. And now these players are going to lead him even more to where the ball is, and he can work off him. He was even outmarking Harley Reid at times too, which was good to see.
Yeah, oh, look, Ross was really, really good. Like, Reid was fantastic and, like, fantastic in the
He was smashing
half,
us, yeah.
Right? What Ross did in the second half ended up with Reid having to move to the forward line to make an impact. That says yes. What a good job he did. At the same time, he's had 25 possessions, 5 clearances, 9 contested possessions, 9 tackles, still had 6 score involvements and 4 inside 50s. It was a huge game from Ross. It probably, there's a couple other players that put up some really big numbers and had a massive impact on the contest. But from a point of view of setting us up by locking them down, it's had a massive impact on the result.
Did you like what you saw there, CB, of Jack Ross's tagging work? And how have you found his game balancing offense versus defense? And I'm liking him doing this role more than the half forward role as well.
To be honest, I think we probably will broaden the conversation out a bit. How nice is it to see Uze finally mixing up the midfield group a bit? We know we've got the two mainstays in there. Putting Ross, putting Seth Campbell in there, changing it up, getting a bit of outside speed amongst the grunt, and look at the results we're getting. So what we've been asking for a long time, we're starting to see some results. So Jack Ross going into midfield, and it poses a really interesting question now. What do you do with him next week? Do you sit him on Nick Dacos or someone else? What are you doing with Jack Ross next week?
Well, I guess the problem might be that Nick Dacos actually played half back for a lot of last week, and I don't think we would use Ross there. So that it might actually mitigate his ability to tag, but maybe he goes to maybe Josh Dacos is in the middle who can have a big game, or maybe we'll finally send someone a steel side bottom after 15 years of pain. Who knows? But
We'll never change.
But to CB's point, Grock, it was nice to see some different faces in CBAs, albeit it was only very minor, but it was good to see. And I know Seth Campbell was mentioned. He had a good game as well. That running goal was electric, and it was such a shame he got a bit of friendly fire from Tim Taranto.
How many weeks is Taranto going to get?
Four.
Well, the silly thing about it is that Taranto did nothing wrong, but if that was an opponent, he would be getting suspended. We are no longer allowed to have accidents in this game, and it shits me because it's a football act, and if that was an opponent, Taranto wouldn't be playing this week. It's ridiculous.
Can that point on Rocky, can I just say, Rocky, you might have hacked the Big Footy Tiger Cast conversation on Twitter, because I raised the fact on Taranto, and Michaels and EJ will hopefully back me up on this.
I'm not backing you up.
I actually raised the question whether Tim Taranto moving forward, do you put him more in the Dusty role where he starts playing more 50-50 forward mid or what have you? Because he actually is a really crafty, smart forward. And that might enable us to get a bit more speed and just change the mix up again and give us another variable in the midfield. So thank you for bringing that up, because it is something that geniuses like you and me, Rocky, we think about these things and we actually do bring them up during the week, even if our other people don't want to talk about it.
It's a good point. It's a good point. I mean, we got 5 goals out of Hopper and Taranto, Grock, which I think if we're going to be any chance to kick a score of any kind in any given game, that needs to happen. We do need our midfielders to be kicking goals. And it was good to see Taranto and Hopper playing a lot more forward of centre, being involved in those chains. I mean, Sonzi obviously found Hopper, or Taranto, I think it was, with the handball inside 50. I think it showed that it can work. It can be damaging, and then it gives someone else a turn further up the ground.
Yeah, I was going to actually address that before Rocky's comment. Yeah, it's fantastic. When you've got the younger boys, obviously Morris going through there, Campbell, and the youngsters, and they're competing well, they're winning contests, it does allow Hopper and Taranto to go forward and impact. And Taranto's, both of the boys actually have had pretty strong goal-kicking games over the past month, which has been really pleasing to see. So, yeah, it's been really, really solid. And Seth Campbell, absolutely fantastic goal. I mean, that's what we want to see more of, getting some pace around the ball. And it was really, really noticeable when Sonzi was in there as well. Just the difference. It comes down to being able to win the contest, though, and we haven't really been able to do that in the midfield over the past, you know, 7-8 weeks, which has meant that Taranto and Hopper have had to be full time mids. They haven't had the chance to go forward outside the last couple of weeks. But against West Coast, their midfield outside of the first quarter and a half didn't really give a yelp. So that definitely helped. And when the mids are able to go forward and hit the scoreboard, it also takes pressure off the forwards. It takes pressure off Jonty. It takes pressure off Mansell to hit the scoreboard as well. And I think that made it a lot easier for our forwards. And also conversion is another thing. Being able to kick straight for the most part also makes a big difference when you're having shots at goal as well. The more you put through, the easier it becomes to kick them, because you don't have that little man in your head, that pressure saying you really need to nail this.
We definitely have some goals that we usually wouldn't.
Yeah, it was an all over the ground. It was everyone contributed well, which is all you can ask for.
The next one, gents, I want to get everyone's thoughts on, including the chat as well. Tyler Sonzi had 21 disposals, 81% efficiency, 7 contested possessions. The numbers are kind of a side product. It was the fact, and it's something we've all spoken about. We noticed a few weeks ago, well, the last 2 games, he wasn't committing to contests as well as we would want a Richmond player to do. And we obviously saw all the footage of him getting subbed out. He was pretty upset. And EJ, I still think you made the greatest point on this last week, that even though optically it didn't look great, it showed he gave a shit. He actually cared about wanting to make an impact and improve.
Go on, EJ. Number one, Sonzi hater. Go on.
Mate, I'm not a Sonzi hater. His skills are what we need. And I have maintained that he doesn't need to be an inside mid to be a fixture in this side, he attended one centre bounce. Where did he play on the weekend? Where did he play? Where did he play?
Up and around the grounds. He got. I think ultimately it was just good that he was getting more involved. Like he wasn't pigeonholed.
My point is all these people screaming saying he's being played out of position. He's an inside mid. If you're good enough. He wasn't an inside mid on the weekend, and he was bloody fantastic. His skills were fantastic. His intensity was great. He set himself a bar now. No more pulling out and doing his stuff. You play like that, your best 23, you're playing every week.
I make no apologies for calling that kick sexual. I thought it was a wonderful kick. It takes balls to take that kick.
100%.
To execute it. There was four players around Taranto, and he just put it on top of his head. It was unbelievable. But like I said, it was the moment in the first quarter when the ball was kicked across the face of our goal in between Sonzi, his opponent, and then someone else in front of him. And he just went head on, grabbed the ball, smashed into the West Coast player, got wrapped up for a stoppage. And I'm like, great, that's it. That's the penny drop moment, hopefully. And Grock, hopefully he goes on with it, because as EJ rightly alluded to, if that's now his new, that has to be his new standard now, that kind of intensity. And I dare say that there were some conversations had during the week about him wanting to prove himself and whatever. And he's gone and done so, and hopefully we see more of it.
Yeah, I think it also comes down to West Coast playing a bit bruise free and not really tackling or pressuring, especially in the middle half of that game, which suits Sonzi. There was one act that he probably could have gone harder and we would have scored a goal out of it on the wing, where he just didn't commit to the ball bouncing in front of him hard enough and the contest got killed. But that's his best game that he's had for the club in a long time, probably since his debut year. And that has to be the standard. As you said, we've seen it with Morris now, where he's had two out of three games. And the one game that he didn't really set alight was the Essendon game, where they dragged everyone down to their shit level. But this needs to be where Sonzi's at now. On the wing, I think probably suits him a little bit. He's got a bit more space to run, a bit more space to think about his decisions when he's got the ball in hand. Doesn't have to rush, doesn't really have to worry about body contact or crashing in. That needs to be his level now.
He actually reads it well, like playing on that half or the wing area. He actually stays out wide and holds shape quite nicely to be an outlet pass. And if we move the ball quick enough, it actually gives us another good option. But yeah, hopefully we see more of it.
His skills are that good. If he's playing inside, he's not making that kick.
Yep.
Right? He's too skilled to be playing inside. We've got inside midfielders. Mm. Why would you waste that boot on a hack kick out of a centre square contest?
I guess he could be used as the secondary possession, though. Like if someone was to handball out to him in the midfield and he was breaking away like what teams do to us, then it would be of benefit. But definitely not as an extractor, to your point. Not as an extractor, but needs to be the second possession getter. Kind of like what Louis Callaway, how he was feeding Dyson Sharp in the carnival. Someone feed it outside and let Sonzi do his thing with the kicking. But
JWB had a good point, though, with Sonzi. It's going to be interesting to see how he goes this week against Collingwood, who actually pressure and chase and tackle. That's going to be the pressure test.
And I think it'll be the pressure test for all of our players, to be honest. I mean, playing against arguably the best team in the competition, I know they lost the last couple of games, but it will be a big test for him. We can't not talk about your man, Grock, Jonty Fall. 2 goals, 3 assists, 4 marks inside 50. Kicked for the first time multiple goals in a game and started to feel like he got some reward for effort. It was a really good game by him. The work rate of this kid is phenomenal in a team that's struggling, I guess, in some games like we are. He's been super.
Absolutely. And before we get started, I want to get EJ's thoughts on Jonty first. If I went back to our draft night and this was the one pick he said he wasn't sure on. Has your opinion changed, EJ?
Oh, it had changed weeks ago. His work rate is fantastic. And there was one particular action for me that had everything to do with team and nothing to do with Jonty, right? He sent the ball to Sonzi. He didn't have to do that. That's maturity beyond his years. He's hard as nails. He's got high work rate. Well, we've got Sims as hard as nails. Jonty's hard as nails, but Jonty is obviously much more mobile and, you know, I think he's got more tricks, 100%. So, no, I love him. Yeah, I've changed my mind. Oh, well, I haven't changed my mind, but I can no longer doubt.
Yeah.
Can I just raise 2 points, Grok, for you? First one, how good was his contest against Harley Reid?
Oh,
where he went in, right? And secondly, all you Richmond poison pen wankers out there, and we know, you know who you are, that wanted to, you were just waiting to talk about Shanahan. You were just waiting to tell us how we got that wrong, and there it is. There it is. We got the pick right. So I just want to put that on the record.
I know West Coast had a quiet game. I think Shanahan looks all right.
I don't think he's going to be a failure.
All the poison pens are out there criticising the 4 pick over Shanahan. There it is. Over to you, Grok.
Jonty, I mean, what can be said that I haven't said week in, week out when I've been on here? I absolutely love the bloke. Just his work rate. I mean, for a first-year key forward, the way that he moves up and down the ground, presents, chases, tackles, puts his body on the line. I mean, Harley Reid's got, 2 years' worth of development on him and went in for a bump and just bounced off and got sat on his ass from, like, was just fantastic. And to get the ball out after that as well, set up a goal, was fantastic. But it's easy to see why he was rated as the most well-rounded forward in the draft. He does everything that you want. And for the biggest thing too is just his aggression, not just at the ball but at the man. Whenever there's a niggle, he's one of the first ones in flying the flag for teammates. He loves the tough stuff, but just how clean he is below his knees as well. When the ball's on the deck, it's been a while since I've seen a key forward in their first year where they're in a contest and you think he's going to halve it. He's not going to get beaten so much, but he's at least going to halve the contest. And with Jonty, I'm at that point now where if the ball's kicked in his direction, I know that he's going to make the defenders really work for it and at least halve it. Like, it's just fantastic. And, this lad is going to be a gun for us for the next 15 years.
Grok, did you think he would be this good this early?
No. I will admit, no. I thought he'd probably take maybe 18 months, especially given the stress fractures in his back last year and missing a lot of the preseason, which again I think people overlook as well, which makes it even more freakish what he's doing this year, considering he's essentially 6 months behind in development in terms of Armstrong, Shanahan, and the other tools from the draft. And the fact that he's playing better than the others is insane. It comes down to work rate too. If you work hard, you're going to get involved. You're going to have good games. And that's probably his biggest thing in regards to all the other forwards is just his work rate.
How many goals is he on so far?
I think he's on up to 7 now, I think. 7 or 8.
7, 13 or something. But he's getting the shots. The point is, he's actually getting the shots on goal. He's getting his hands on it and he's creating chances. So
you'd love him to end up with like 12 to 15 for the year or something like that.
Yeah. I think the goal that he kicked against Essendon really settled his nerves. I think it was got the monkey off the back. All those misses kind of been good. But did anyone see the little clips of what the club were putting on during the training session before the game on the Friday? He nailed a banana from 45 out off 2 steps. Just 1, 2, bang. Curled it right in. Was a ripper, and as soon as I saw that, I was like, "Yeah, he's going to kick a couple this weekend."
And he's a booming kick as well, which we love. The last one I want to mention, CB Tyler Young, has made a profound impact, I think, upon his return to this senior side. 14 disposals at 100% to back up his. I think we've been at 95% the week before, and I know the easy out for some is to say it's only been against Essendon and West Coast, but he still had to get the ball. Still didn't turn it over and was sound defensively. And he's actually added a bit more of an offensive element to his game with a couple of runs out of the back line, hitting his targets. I feel like he's going to be hard to dislodge.
Oh, he's not going anywhere. It's It's we've managed him back terrifically. He did his time in the reserves, got his fitness. He's come back in, hasn't missed a beat. Doesn't look ahead of play. Yeah, you know, again, you know, you play against what you're playing against, but keep in mind against Essendon, it was Nate Caddy and 2 meter Peter, so they weren't slouches.
Yeah.
West Coast is different. They were down a few, but what he was able to do was really expose the West Coast forwards with his run and dash. And that last quarter, I'll say now, I know you don't show all the votes, but Tyler Young was in my votes from the weekend again. It's 2 weeks in a row I've had him in my votes because he finished the game so strongly. He was like a Donald Trump's wall, mate. He was just stopping everything. So amazing. So wrapped for him to come back and be this good after missing 12 months. Been terrific.
Did you see it coming, EJ, the turnaround of Tyler Young? I think we all thought he was playing pretty well before he went down with the knee, but the return seems a better version of himself.
Like Grok with fall, not this quickly. What really impresses me is how calm he is.
Yeah.
Like, he's got poise. There's no panic. Even when it doesn't go well, he doesn't lose his shit. There's no panic. And that's a very good quality to have as a key defender.
And it's going to create a really interesting discussion in about 5 minutes' time, I reckon, when we talk about the changes for next week. So, do you have
to add, Grok? You go.
I was going to say, the one thing that I've been really impressed with Young is his kicking out of the back line. It's so much more improved since before he did his knee. When he did his knee, he was prone to some really shocking turnovers and hat kicks out of the back line. But his ball use since he's been back has been exquisite. Like, he is really, I think he started to realize what his limitations are. And he's now playing, he's playing safe. He's taking the right kick. He's taking the first option when it presents, which is massive as well.
And Miller as well. Both their kicking good.
But speaking of knowing your limitations, I'm going to give some love to a bloke that wasn't in the rundown, but I'll give a brief one. The people who are bagging Cozzy, he's playing his role really, really well structurally forward for us at the moment. Yeah, he hasn't kicked any goals, but he's competing and he's taking the best defender and the biggest body, and he's creating opportunities for the smaller blokes around him, what have you. So from a structure point of view, Cozzy's playing very, very, very good team-orientated football. I'll say that. Is that fair, boys?
I agree. He fights tooth and nail at every contest, and that was exactly why he was bought in. He wasn't bought in to take 5 marks and kick 3 goals like Tom Lynch would expect. He was purely brought in to halve a contest and make sure that the other team doesn't intercept Mark. That was literally it. He's done it well. But again, I think there'll be an interesting discussion in about 5 minutes as to where that lands. We'll go. Are you primed and ready to go, EJ?
Yes, I am.
All right, then it's time for
man.
Half intro. There we go. Full intro.
Look, there's a couple of special mentions apart from Grok and CB. that Collingwood Freo game, right? The 50-meter penalty paid against the Freo player for apparently pointing at the scoreboard.
Yeah, right? Carl Warner
hasn't been paid all year, and he didn't. He said nothing to the umpire, and he didn't point to the scoreboard. He looked around and he went, oh, like he was exasperated, and he threw his hand up, and he goes, umpire's like pointing to the scoreboard, 50 meters. And Mark, it was a disgraceful decision, honestly.
Especially after Oliver on the game before, like with how demonstrative he was and not getting 50, that was a joke against Warner.
And also, special mention: the AFL are a special organisation. Their planning is unbelievable. If anyone has seen this week's fixture, look, it's bad enough that we've got Hawthorn and Carlton on Thursday night, okay? We've got Carlton and Essendon for Thursday night for the rest of the year. That's bad enough. They've got two Friday night games half an hour apart. So if you want to watch both games, sorry, you can't. Which means we've only got two Sunday games and they manage to overlap. Like, seriously.
Come on, man.
We should have no overlapping games bar the Saturday night two games. Every other game should have its own airspace. There's plenty of time over the Thursday to Sunday. Sort it out.
Agreed.
But this week...
Oh, can I give an honourable mention as well?
Yes.
I want to give an honourable mention to the protected space rule that we had about 10, 50-metre free kicks for in our game. For both sides, it wasn't just us. Some of those decisions, I'm like, this has to be rule of the night. It was... half the time the play is not actually impacting the player kicking the ball. So if they're not in the way, just get on with it. It was honestly mind-blowing how many 50 metres were paid for that.
It wasn't just that game. It was the rule.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it has to have been. Correct. Yeah.
Rule of the week.
And even, what about the Luke Jackson one? What about Luke Jackson, how he went to handball and got tackled, got done for holding the ball, and he didn't actually take a step. And there's another one from, might have been a few weeks ago, and a player got 50 metres for it. It's like we can't have the same thing happening and two different outcomes. No wonder everyone's confused.
Yeah. I've got an honourable mention.
Oh, okay. Yep, go.
It was the one that I sent to you in chat before the weekend. Simon Garlick. Did anyone see Simon Garlick come out and say that he wanted to abolish he wants the AFL to scrap the father-son rule? I find this incredibly hypocritical from Simon Garlick, considering he was CEO at the Western Bulldogs during the period that they drafted Liberatore, Wallace, Hunter and Zane Cordy. I mean, seriously, what a flog. Like, you draft, you know, three pretty good footballers in Libba, Wallace and Hunter, and now all of a sudden you want to scrap it? Like, GAGF.
Come on, man.
There's got to be room for some romanticism and some things left in the game. Like, I love the fact that the Dacos boys are playing for Collingwood. I love the fact that the Camprioli boys are playing for Carlton. I hope to God we get Harry Scott and put him in a Richmond jumper. You know, like, you know, and we've got young Kellaway coming through. Like, you want, look, I mean, imagine, I know Gary Ablett Jr. went and played for Gold Coast, but Gary Ablett's kid played for Geelong, and so did Nathan Ablett. Do you really want those kids playing? You'd want to spew. If a Dacos was playing for Essendon, you'd want to spew up in your mouth. Seriously. Like, Garlick can just cram it up his ass. How about we just leave some things? Just leave some things for the football public because that's what we want, rather than listen to some toff up there who's just lost touch with football reality.
Oh, geez, this has been a spicy segment this week. I'm loving this. just back on the fixture of this week's fixture too. Jones Racing has also pointed out we still don't know when we're playing in the last round, right? Which is just a joke. We've only got 5 weeks to go. It wouldn't surprise
me. Those who have to organise the game balls for that game, and we don't know what the hell we're doing.
Right? It wouldn't surprise me if they fixtured both preliminary finals on for the same time. But the winner this week is our friends at the MRO.
Friend.
Now, I've got to be. I'm one of these people that say that all this anti-Richmond stuff is a load of shit and whatever. But when you've got the whole of the social media of the AFL saying, if that was Zorko, if that was Pickett, if that was so-and-so, they'd be getting weeks. How in the hell Darcy Moore doesn't even get a financial sanction for dropping those knees in the back is, A, disgraceful, but, B, it's beyond belief. Like, if that was Tom Lynch, that
Toby
would be...
Toby Green, anyone, yeah.
Didn't even get a mention.
Go back a week.
I'll give you one. Go back a week. How the hell did Harley Reid line up against us when he intentionally kicked and tripped a bloke? He should never have played against us. He should have got a week.
So, for a long time, that was it was a suspension at one point in time. Dustin Fletcher copped a few weeks for it. I don't know when it officially ended, But yeah, that Darcy Moore one was interesting. It's yeah, you don't, that's now, potential to cause injury.
Come on, can I just put a late come on man in for Michaels?
Oh,
you go.
Why?
There's ten come on mans on the top eight leaderboard.
Yeah, okay. I edited it late. All right, I edited it late.
Come on, man.
I come on, man. Myself. Fair enough. We'll take that. I'll get that updated for the next one.
I mean, just on the Darcy Moore thing. I mean, we've seen Tom Lonigan, we've seen Dusty, we've seen Petraka, you know, all suffer serious internal injuries. Oh, again,
another one.
Yep. Absolutely. Like it blows my mind where a split second incident with Stephen May, who was contesting and may or may not have thrown an elbow. I mean, the vision isn't clear on that. Getting 3 weeks and Darcy Moore not even getting a mention. I mean, excuse the language, but we've been stung twice. Where the fuck is this potential to cause serious injury clause now? Like that has what Darcy Moore did has the potential to cause some serious internal
and it was
injury.
It was not a football act.
No,
like that's not a football act.
He admitted after the game he did it deliberately to try and get the Dockers in to reverse the free kick for remonstrating with him. He said that it was a ploy. Yep. How is that not a suspension then when he said he's deliberately done something that could have seriously injured a player? Like yeah, it's mind-boggling.
You can't call it careless or reckless because he's called it deliberate.
Yeah, that's right. He called it
intentional himself.
So and keep in mind that there were people that wanted Tom Lynch suspended a few years ago when he pushed the Brisbane Lions players head into the turf. That was a push they wanted him suspended, but Darcy Moore could put knees into someone's back and okay.
It was a bit
AFL.
It's a bit more than a push.
Yeah.
It's a bit more than a push.
Hopefully we get it all fixed next year. We'll have You'll to wait and see. All right, well, we do have a big game against the Magpies this week, and it's a weird set of circumstances. They're coming off two losses. Oh, sorry, CB.
Hang on. A quick little VFL report. Hopefully this week we should see Alger, Armstrong, Smiley, and McAuliffe return for the VFL program. Oh, so
you've gone. Is that come out, has it?
I went and had a look at the last fitness report and had a look at Circle's timeline. So I reckon hopefully we'll get up to four players back in.
Because usually we would have had one for tonight and it hasn't come out yet. But the Smiley will be interesting. I do firmly believe the other ones you mentioned, Elgar, Armstrong, and who's the other player you mentioned? McAuliffe. I do firmly believe they will all play. Smiley, I'm not fully sold on playing. I really don't know. I think they're erring on a lot more of the side of caution with him. But hopefully we get to see the other ones back. There was a scratch match that was played for the VFL on the weekend as well that Tom Lynch was able to play in. I've got no idea what happened in the said scratch match. If anyone else has heard, let us know. It was kept very much under wraps and no one knows anything, which is maybe sometimes a good thing. But, yeah, I just thought I would flag that as well. But big game for the Tigers this week against the Pies, who were sitting first, but they've lost their last two. We've won our last two. They're going to be wanting blood. But what I'm going to find interesting with this game is we obviously not long ago had our matches against Geelong, Adelaide and Western Bulldogs where we really struggled to get our game going. We were quite low on confidence. This time we're playing against a top four side, you would have to say with confidence on the way that we've played the last 2 weeks. It's going to be interesting to see if we can get our game up and going a little bit. I'm not at all suggesting we'll be able to get it going like we did against West Coast for four quarters, but maybe we'll see a bit more, hopefully, this week than what we saw against the other top four sides because of where we're at. But they are defensively very, very sound and very, very dangerous with how they set up. But I guess first and foremost, ins and outs, there's a real conundrum that's happening for this week. We've got Seth Campbell, the forced out, unfortunately, with the concussion. So you would have to guess that someone like a Steely Green or Jasper Elgar might be a chance to get recalled for that role. And then there's the Noah Bolter situation. So Bolter's curfew is now about to finish. If it hasn't already this week, it's definitely before that game. So he's now eligible for selection. I personally don't see a spot for him in the backline, CB. I think we would be crazy to disrupt what's working so far. I can, however, as unpopular as it might be, see him playing a role forward, maybe in place of Cozzy or maybe alongside Cozzy, maybe for Tom Sims, I don't know. Where do you see Bolter playing, if at all? And who's the change for Seth Gander?
As people know, I'm a simple man. And I have simple ideas and I say simple things. Isn't that right, Ege? So
Don't stop. Keep going.
So for me, I think Sims could do with a break. I would have Bolter in as my second ruck forward because the Pies have got some pretty big defenders. So we're going to need to stop Darcy Moore and Maynard and those lads. So to me, it makes sense.
They might have Billy Frampton back as well.
Correct. So we're going to need two big mature bodies in the attack, at least two of them, and have Jonty for the third. So I would go Sims out for a breather, Bolter second ruck forward, and I would have Trezise come into the team, and I would have Steely Green as my sub. That simple.
EJ, your thoughts? And do you know how far away Lynch is? Is it 2 weeks? 1 week? I can't remember how many weeks he's got left.
Three out of four. So he's got two to go.
Okay.
David Harris with a very interesting comment there. I can't believe that. Surely.
Where's that?
No.
Oh, sorry. No. Bolt was coming in and we'll play.
No. Go down another three.
No, surely not.
Surely not.
You can't do that. Against Darcy Cameron, that's suicide.
Look,
that would be fascinating.
I really like what we've done, and I would really love for Bolter to come back through the twos. That's what I would love. I do think that the match committee will bring him in, but I would love for him to earn his stripes in the twos. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, what would be interesting, it would be interesting to know if he played in that scratch match as well, and if he did, how did he go? I know it's not a huge form line, but it's something, I guess, Grok. What are you doing on the Bolter front and the Seth Campbell front?
Yeah, I think with the Pies' back line being pretty solid, pretty established, I think bringing Bolter in purely just to play on Darcy Moore, I think that makes the most sense. I think as a forward, we'll probably get more out of Bolter than what we're getting out of Cozzy. I mean, no knock on Cozzy. He's done his role. But with the way that the Pies set up, we're going to need a forward to hit the scoreboard somewhat, being the biggest body there, the most senior body. And I think Bolter probably gives us more of a chance to do that. In regards to who comes in for Seth, I think it's probably Steely Green. He's had a pretty good couple of weeks at VFL level. And based on that, I think he is the sub. I think it'd be a bit stiff for one of Sonzi or Trezise to be sub again based on the games that they've had.
Could not sub either of them, I wouldn't have thought. Few people in chat mentioning Hayes Brown. Hayes Brown debut, I hear. Hayes Brown, and I flagged bringing him in. I thought last week would have been a good game to bring him in for against West Coast. Not sure I feel the same against the Pies. I don't know whether Mason Cox will play for them this week. I mean, I was talking to Swoop Luke today for Behind Friendly Lines, and he seemed to think that Cox might get dropped, which would be good for our 2018 PTSD. But, yeah, not too sure he will. I mean, I want to see Hayes Brown at some point this year. I don't know if this is the game I would do it, unless anyone thinks otherwise.
He's not ready. Around the ground, he's not ready.
I understand that, but is he any less ready than what Sims is, who's going to do the same job?
I think Sims does more around the ground.
I reckon we'd get more around the ground out of Hayes Brown from a ruck contest. He's 25 years old, so he's got a lot more size and physicality than what Sims has against a more seasoned ruckman.
But that's why I think Bolter goes second ruck.
Well, and he would be the pick of the three if you were having to schoolyard select. I think he would put Bolter first, I reckon.
Yeah.
Sims has natural athletic ability and tank that Hayes Brown just doesn't have.
Yep. That's a point of difference as well. That's a fair point.
I think if we're going to bring Hayes Brown in over the games that we've got coming up, Witts is probably the best matchup for him in terms of he's not super mobile, not super athletic. Mm. He just grinds them down. I think that's probably the best matchup. I mean, the other one is Geelong, but Reece Stanley's reasonably solid around the ground. He's got a pretty big tank and work rate, so I'm not quite sure that's the best one either.
Yeah, some interesting selections. Make sure we hit the like button as well, guys. We've got 300 over 300 people watching tonight, lads. We're smashing it here. Good to hear the good to see the Tiger Army on board. Vertex, how until Smiley's ready? Well, we kind of thought we'd have the fitness report tonight, but we don't have it, so we're not too sure. But how do we? Is there a world in which we can beat Collingwood? I know that sounds extraordinarily far fetched and probably won't happen. If we're not going to beat them, what do we have to do, CB, to mitigate the margin? Now, historically, bar maybe one game this year, Collingwood don't typically thump sides, which is good. But I do have a funny feeling they're going to want to be honing in and resetting themselves because they've copped a bit of backlash from supporters for resting players in the last couple of weeks, which has resulted in two losses. Looks good and sounds great when it works for you, but when it backfires, it kind of goes the other way. So how do you see it playing out? Because they might be getting Bobby Hill back. They might be getting Membry back.
Remember
Frampton. So a few players in for them.
Remember last week when you asked me when the game would be won, I said it'll be whoever punishes the other mob on turnover?
Yep.
Unfortunately, I think we are going to get punished. Two things will happen. Collingwood aren't going to give us the centre corridor like West Coast gave us. So we're going to have to go down the line more. And then unfortunately, I think the way we butcher the ball some of the time, it's going to come back with maximum interest. And I if we can keep it under 50 points, I'll be pretty happy with that. I think the Pies, they've lost two. They're going to be savage. And it's going to take a hell of a lot for, I mean, yeah, the midfield, it's going to take a hell of a lot to go right for us to get remotely close to them. The Dacos boys are both in, you know, Josh Dacos is in red hot form. They found a new role for him. Elliot's in great nick. You know, their defense is rock solid. They know what they're doing. They've got Bobby Hill back this week, Frampton back. There's another one coming back as well. Membry is back as well.
Yeah, Membry, yeah.
So, they're top of the ladder for a reason. Let's be serious, right? And give them some respect. They've played some very good football.
So how much of a free hit is it, EJ? And what does a free hit look like for us? And what do we need to do to try and get something out of this game?
I think we're past the free hit stage. I don't think it's a free hit. I just would like to see some of the younger kids against a side that will bring pressure be able to retain their composure. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing how Houghton handles a good defense.
Yep.
Because I think a game like this is where he could possibly stand out because of who he is and how he plays. Like some players are just better against better. So I'm looking to see Sonzi back up what he did. You know, I want to see Mansell back up what he did because Mansell had a really good game. We didn't talk about him. His numbers were off the charts.
Yeah.
And he hit the scoreboard too. Yeah.
I want to see Houghton. So that's what I want to see this week. I don't care if we lose by 10 goals. We've been beaten a few times this year where we've had one or two bad quarters, but we've fought it out to the end. Retain our composure, fight it out to the end, have the kids show some spark. That's what I'm looking for.
Mansell, if you're watching, I need you to watch a game from probably 2010 with Jake King. And can you please go full Jake King on Maynard? That's all I'm asking you. You'll know the game when you see it, when he's fighting.
Jake King on Didac.
Jake King on Brandon Maynard, please.
And Grock, obviously we've seen Jack Ross tag in recent weeks. The obvious player that comes to mind first is obviously Nick Dacos, but as we mentioned earlier, has played a bit of halfback recently as well. I guess the Pies are trying to find some other bits and pieces of what might work well for them come finals time. If he plays halfback, I don't think we tag him, but if he plays midfield, do you give Jack Ross the job from the start? I don't at all expect him to be able to execute it like he has the Reed and the Merritt job because Dacos is a different beast. But what would you do in that space?
See, it's tough on who to tag at the Pies. Obviously, you've got Nick Dacos. He's their star. But again, it's circumstantial on where he actually plays, especially with the players returning that they have. You've got Josh Dacos on the wing, who's really dangerous. There's Sidebottom, who always tears us a new one. And Paddy Lipinski is the number one player for hitting targets inside forward 50. So
yeah,
he's the one that really they want to get the ball into the hands of in the forward third of the ground so we can hit a target. So there's quite a few players that you could make arguments for who Ross goes to. I think you probably would have to start him on Nick Dacos and then sort of rotate him on who's having the most impact. It's going to be fascinating. And yeah, I just hope he does well. The one thing that I do want to see is I want us to block the midfield. Collingwood are very much like Geelong. They love going through the middle fast and quick. We need to force them wide. We can't give them the easy transition through the middle because they'll pick us apart with their foot skills, and we'll have a hard time stopping it. So we need to be really defensive and force them out long to a contest.
Is there any chance when we roll extra numbers to the contest, we can cover the extra numbers that will roll up to the contest from Collingwood? You know, Collingwood always get it out. There wasn't that bloke forward of the pack or side, so the ball spills out. They're just off to the races. Is there any chance we can actually plan for that and stop that friggin' run out of the stoppage? Because they kill us on that as well.
Their outside run is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one area where we are a bit naive, and that's just useful enthusiasm. We overcommit to the contest and have too many numbers at the ball and leave those outside runners. And that is what scares me about Collingwood. It's not a bad thing to have people that want to commit and be at the contest, but just structurally we're not organised enough yet, as in who's committing and who's guarding that second possession. That will come in time. It's one of the major areas of concern for me.
Yeah, It almost comes across that we don't quite trust the players in the contest to either win it or halve it, so we have to commit. Whereas other clubs, they know with the bigger bodies, they'll either win it or halve it, so they don't have to go in. They can hang out in the dangerous space on the outside. So, again, I'm with you. It's happened. The overcommitting to a contest has happened since 2022 under Dimmer. It's been it's been insane over the last 3 years. You'd think they would have addressed it, but...
The other stat that scared me from the Collingwood game against Freo is they registered 34 tackles inside 50, which is an AFL record. That's phenomenal. I think McCreary had 15 and Long had about 12 or 13. So they are prepared to work hard and cause turnover when the ball's in inside 50 as well. So it's going to put our defence under a lot of pressure. It's actually going to be interesting to see how our defence stands up. Brody Majacek, I guess CB would play as one of the main forwards. And let's assume Tim Membry plays as well. Who would you put on who in terms of Miller and Young against Majacek and Membry?
I think I would like Tyler Young on Majacek.
Yep.
Miller, Membry.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that's the problem.
They're not the problem. It's actually Elliot's the problem.
No, they're not the problem. It's Elliot and Bobby Hill and Schultz and whoever else is down there. That's the problem for sure. Who goes to them? Because I don't think we've got anyone quick enough to play on Bobby Hill.
No, we don't. I mean, unless you put someone like Trainer on him to learn, but he's going to be too smart for him. He'll let a merry dance. Or having said that, do you do Broad on Elliot?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Broad's a good matchup for Elliot. Size wise, he closes pretty well. I think that one makes sense.
And maybe Tigger.
Our best matchup for Bobby Hill plays in the forward line now. Mansell would have been quick enough to go with him. He started off down back.
Yeah. Mansell's going to be busy fighting 18 blokes up the front end of the ground.
I know, but you know what I'm saying. He started off them down there, and he, body wise and speed wise, etc. He's actually not a bad matchup, but that just won't happen.
So Bobby Hill not officially playing yet, but as I said, I was talking to Swoop Luke this morning, who's a Collingwood man, and he reckons that Bobby Hill is a very decent chance to play. And he's at all the trainings and everything like that, so he's been watching them very closely. So it'll be a bit of a watch this space.
Short on Hill, no. Short is horrible.
Trezise? Nick's gone with Trezise.
Yeah.
Don't mind that. Don't mind that.
Not a bad shout. He's got some pace on him, Trezise.
So does Brown. Brown's pretty quick.
Yeah, maybe Brownie. Brown on Hill wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Speaking of Short, he's had two really good games in a row now. As you mentioned, the Pies forward pressure, this is going to be another test for him to see if he can step up as a leader where he's not going to have the space to, you know, the space and time to get rid of the ball cleanly.
He actually won a couple of really good one-on-one defensive contests on the weekend, which I noted, like, I was like, wow, that is not, who is that man in that jumper?
Yeah.
The 1-2 punch of Short and Banks, I'm enjoying having two offensive halfbacks. So you've got different avenues. You're not pigeonholed to one person that's easy to defend.
We should give Jaden Short some love. Since he's come back from his injury in VFL, we've got the Jaden Short of 2020, I reckon. It's the best footy he's played in years. He looks really good.
Yep.
That's fair call. A lot of people saying it's going to be raining on Sunday. How does that change things? That probably helps us a little bit, doesn't it?
Just dirty ball. Just bang the bastard forward.
On dirty ball, I want to shout Mansell out, and I don't know if this was intentional at all, but there was at least two or three times that he grubber-kicked the ball inside 50 where there was an outnumber to West Coast favour, so they couldn't mark it. But the ball hit the deck and then bounced right angles, and we actually were able to lock it up. And I don't know if he meant either of them, but it worked well for us. So... if it's raining, yeah, just scrubber it in. Don't worry about kicking it in the air.
That's how Freo beat the Eagles. They didn't get the clean ball to allow the intercepts from Maynard, from Moore. They scrubbered it unless they had a clear option. They put it to space. They kicked it to ground. That's Collingwood's one wood in the back line is their intercept marking. If you deny them that, they struggle.
And that's why whoever's on Darcy Moore just has to keep him accountable. And Bolton might be actually a good matchup for him, to be honest. Athletically, I think he goes all right.
That's what I'm saying. Well, that's why Cozzy...
On a one-week sample size, whoever plays on Moore kicks six.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. Proof's there. Irrefutable.
Part of my reasoning for Bolter on Moore is if Moore tries that dirty shit on Bolter, fireworks are going to happen.
He might be on another curfew.
12 week suspension.
He'll be rocking up the pre-season with an ankle brace. Fantastic.
All right. With that all said and done, let's get the tips, including margins. Chuck them in chat as well. We'll put a few up on the screen. We'll see if we've got any hope at all. We just got to study Frio's game, I think, and try and replicate that somehow. CB, what are you tipping in margin?
Pies by 42.
You'd almost take that. I know that sounds really low bar type stuff, but they're pretty good. EJ?
Pies by 47.
Ooh. Interesting fact from RFC Centre here. We're undefeated with O'Gorman umpiring us this year. He's the secret recipe to success. Holy shit. We're not going that desperate, are we?
I think we're living in the twilight zone.
Wow. That's a great start.
Should we do a free kick count? After you boys do your things, should we do a free kick count?
We'll loop back around. All right. Grok, give us the margin first.
If it's dry, no rain, I reckon Pies by 48. If it's wet, 26.
I'll say Pies by 56, but if it's wet, you give ourselves a bit of a chance to halve that. Free kicks, they say, but you want to do a free kick count?
Yeah. I'll say it's going to be
51-6.
I'm going to say 25-14 Collingwood's way.
What about the second half?
Yeah. EJ?
Collingwood plus 13.
Yeah.
That's the differential.
Right. I like it. Yeah.
Grok?
I'm going to say 27-15. Also, crispy fish taco. Bolter's curfew finishes tomorrow, 22nd.
It's probably been my officer for a while.
I've heard there's a party at Bolter's house on Wednesday night.
Surely not.
Late night kebab.
Oh gosh. I reckon the Pies might get the free kicks by about plus 16. It'd be interesting to see how we go there. A few people have been asking as well. This is maybe more aimed at Grok. Is there any trade or gossip updates to share at all? I suppose people are specifically asking on Harley Reid.
No, still nothing. As far as what I've heard over the past couple of weeks, no change. He's considering staying for 2026. Obviously, there were rumours that West Coast are prepared to offer up to $20 million, which is crazy, and it's not true. His managers are having conversations now about what they are prepared to offer. As far as I know, nothing's changed in that space. Reid will be an Eagle in 2026.
There you go.
Interesting. Hopefully we acquire someone else then along the way. But anyway, I think that's a wrap for tonight. Thank you so much, gents, for jumping on tonight. Thank you to everybody for tuning in. We appreciate all the love and support. Huge show. Over 350 views for most of that. It's unbelievable. So good to see everyone tuning in. And yeah, Wednesday night there might be a live with Tiggs. I'm not sure because I will have just travelled to Bali. So we'll have to see if I can work out how to work technology over there. But otherwise, yeah, we'll reconvene on Monday. And look, hopefully we have a red hot crack and we see a good effort against a genuine flag favourite. And I think when watching this game, we need to keep this in mind that they are a flag favourite. And whatever happens, happens. But just have a red hot crack.
Morgan Ashley, where are you? We love you. I thought you were popping in today.
No, I thought of all weeks. It might have been the week, another drive-by. But no, nothing. But thanks again to everybody for tuning in and to you gentlemen for jumping on. And until next week, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Stick it up in Tigers. Skunks. Dirty rock skunks.